miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, March 27, 2021. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are, living through the most important set of events in modern history. Oh, yes. And even though daily life might seem mundane right now, you know, getting up, making your bed, having breakfast, make no mistake, we are living through events right now that will determine the very fate of mankind. Yeah, the very fate of mankind. And will we be slaves and be treated like cattle? Or will mankind, you know, ascend to the stars and beyond, living in harmony with God and living in harmony with creation? Or will we live under a satanic rebellion against the Creator and His creation? You know, a fork in the road has appeared for mankind. And, you know, whether you are religious or not, human beings are clearly the result of a creation, not a cosmic accident, as science would have you believe. No, created in the image of God. And no matter how you interpret that statement, you know, created in the image of God, we are clearly the result of a creation. Beings with a soul and the breath of God is in us. And, you know, if you think about it, when you contemplate the creation of mankind, it really is beyond our ability to conceive of or comprehend. Yet, we all instinctively seem to know that we were created by a power far greater than ourselves. And, you know, that really is important right now to remember because, gosh, you know, it is so easy right now to denigrate our fellow human beings, isn't it? Yeah, it really is, man. You know, it's hard not to hate these people you see walking around with their masks on. You know, these brain-dead zombies who walk around like cowards in a state of perpetual fear. You know, like sheep to the slaughter, right? It's good not to go there, though, man, but it's hard to stop yourself sometimes when you see the stupidity of your fellow human beings right now. But one thing is becoming clear to me, guys, is that we are seeing a deliberate program to re-engineer human beings into a version that better suits the parasitical elite class, aren't we? Oh, yeah. And this program is becoming all pervasive, isn't it? I mean, it is everywhere. Yeah. And yes, a new human, a new world man, you know, created not in the image of God, but created in their image. In their image, guys. Think about that. That's what they're trying to do. Attempting to create a new human. You know, a new human that is, servile and docile with a limited capacity to think, right? Very limited capacity. Yeah. And, you know, a human that has very limited free will and someone who is completely dependent on the system for everything, created in their image. And I believe the primary tool for this is the vaccine. And I think they've been doing this for a long time, guys. We just didn't notice. And this new vaccine is just more advanced than previous technology, but this has been going on for a long time, at least 40 or 50 years. I mean, think about it. People just don't look the same as they used to, do they? I mean, overall, I think we're all, fatter, dumber, and not as good looking as in the past. And, you know, if you want proof of this, watch some old movies or TV shows from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, man. People looked different. They were better looking. I hate to say it, but it's true. The difference is striking. And I see, you know, more and more people, especially younger people, who look vaccine damaged. You know, they just... some of them, I see people with sort of like a mild Down syndrome look to them. Still, you know, functional humans, but they don't have that spark of fire or spark of life in their eyes. Very dull looking eyes. But, you know, there still are plenty of young people, young men who are masculine and good looking, no question, but their numbers are dwindling. So if you think about it too, guys, you know, reconstructing humans in their image, that is the ultimate act of satanic sorcery, isn't it? The ultimate act of satanic sorcery. And so many times when we think about, you know, Satanism, we think about guys in, you know, black robes chanting mumbo jumbo and doing obscene rituals and vile ceremonies under the cover of darkness. And that's certainly true, but recreating humans in their image, that is the ultimate act of satanic sorcery. The ultimate act of rebellion against God and his creation. And now if you think about it too, guys, all this talk of transhumanism is starting to make sense now. Because transhumanism is, you know, even a major part of the World Economic Forum's agenda. You know, one of their videos even says, you know, flat out that in the future, the line will be blurred between the natural and the synthetic, between nature and technology, between man and machine. They're telling us this out in the open. It's not a conspiracy theory, guys. And of course, you know, the head of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, he's a German Jew, make no mistake about that. And almost all the guys at the top of the food chain in this World Economic Forum are Jews as well. And of course, Klaus is a longtime buddy of Henry Kissinger, supposedly becoming friends with him in the 1970s while he attended Harvard. I think there's more to it than that. But that's the official story. They admit that much. And, you know, when you talk about transhumanism, of course, Ray Kurzweil is sort of the guru of this, isn't he? He's been on the scene for a long time, at least 10 years. And Kurzweil is a New York Jew. Even his Wikipedia page admits that. So it's not a conspiracy theory. And all of his transhumanist buddies, his little circle of friends, almost all of them are Jews too, to a man. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, guys. And, you know, they really are openly admitting the plan to transform human beings and recreate us in their image. The image of the parasitical elite class. And these people, guys, they might only be partially human. But one thing's for sure, they certainly have a different consciousness. And they very well may be from a different father than we are. That is very possible. But either way, they completely want to alter what it means to be a human being and change our place in the world. And most importantly, replace God and become gods themselves. That is the end game here, guys. They want to become God. And that's partly why we've seen every bit of spirituality removed from this society as much as possible and replaced with the calls for transgender and gay sex. Hey, that ain't going to end well, guys. And, you know, I just want to touch upon this vaccine agenda too. I want to give a different take than we're hearing in the, you know, alternative media. Because there's been a lot of speculation that, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of people are going to die very quickly from this vaccine. And I just want to say, I don't think that's the way it's going to go down. Not that I'm arguing anything positive for this vaccine, but I just want to take a step back and look at the big picture from the point of view of the conspirators. And, you know, one person that's really come on the scene recently and made a big splash is this Vander Bausch character, a man who used to work for Gavi. Maybe he still does. I don't know. He's got a big background in vaccinology, or quaxination, as Giuseppe likes to say. And this man has been making some rather dire predictions. And many people within the so-called, you know, alternative community, whatever you want to call it, are jumping on this bandwagon and say, hey, this guy must be telling the truth. He's a whistleblower. But, you know, he's outlining a very extreme possibility, extreme scenario. And, you know, he might be right. He might be right. But it's also possible that this man is a plant, a disinformation agent sent in to push the most extreme scenario for the outcome of this vaccine. And it's possible that he was sent in to influence the anti-vaccine crowd and push us into the most extreme scenario to make us look like kooks or nuts, you know, when these dire predictions don't happen. That is possible. And I have to say, I don't like this man. I don't trust this man. I don't like the look in his eyes when he talks. And more importantly, if you look at, you know, this agenda from the point of view of the conspirators, the COVID hoax agenda, we have to look at what are their goals? You know, what are they trying to do here? They want to re-engineer society and human beings. Completely re-engineer it. And if people start dropping dead within a few months after getting this shot in high numbers, they kind of lose the game, because they're going to lose people's willingness to line up voluntarily and get more shots in the future. Because one thing's for sure, this great push for vaccinations is not a one-time deal. This is just the opening round. The first serving, let's say, to serve man. And so anyway, if many people die, if millions of people die right away, this will be hard to achieve, won't it? And, you know, there's no question. I believe that many, many people, millions of people are going to be injured over the long term, severely injured. But I think a lot of these injuries are going to manifest slowly over years or even decades. You know, people's lifespans are going to be shortened. Their overall health will be severely impacted, no question. And I believe a lot of people are going to, you know, die of cancer and stuff like that too. But I think these are going to be, you know, years in the future. Far enough away where, you know, they can say, well, hey, you know, you got cancer. That's not our fault. You know, shit happens. You get cancer. You can't blame it on us. And they have to have a certain degree of plausible deniability in all this, don't they, for this thing to go forward. And of course, I think the other thing that's going to happen are autoimmune diseases. And these manifest slowly as well. And they're sort of a lifetime, you know, problem that people have to deal with that have them. I mean, they're very debilitating. But again, it's going to happen slowly. So it's important that these conspirators who are running, you know, Operation COVID hoax, they have to have plausible deniability. That's very, very important. Because, you know, they want to intentionally destroy the economy and destroy human interaction as we know it, and destroy the system we currently live under. A revolution, right? But this revolution will be different than any other previous revolution, because this same, you know, oligarchy will emerge as the so-called new leaders once this revolution happens. That will be unique, won't it? The only thing that's going to change is that their power will have been concentrated and intensified by orders of magnitude. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, sort of mid-level people who thought they were powerful, who thought they were part of the club. They're going to be flushed. Oh, yeah. And they're going to learn that they were disposable and essentially nothing more than useful idiots who served their purpose. Bye-bye. And so it's a purification of the oligarchy, as Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson so aptly put it, a purification of the oligarchy and a unique revolution where the old boss isn't just like the new boss, just isn't like the old boss. It is the same people. Yeah. So they got to train the great unwashed goyim herd, the cattle, into taking their vaccines every year, maybe even more than once a year. And isn't it interesting how we keep hearing about herd immunity? They're really putting it in our faces what they think of us. But again, this goal is not achievable if people start dropping like flies by the millions. Putting it in our faces. It has to be more gradual. And, you know, they want to destroy the system without disrupting the system. As strange as that sounds, they want to destroy the system without disrupting the system. They don't want to disrupt the top-down social control over humanity, only peel away the amenities that we're used to. Strip it down to its bare essence. And really, if you think about it, the bare essence of it is top-down control over humanity. Yeah. Intentionally destroy the old system. I mean, look, what England is going into complete lockdown in just a couple of days. France, Italy, and Germany, the same. And this Merkel character is actually saying that they're facing a new virus. Talk about fear-mongering. And, you know, one thing that's kind of interesting, if this is so bad, why do we have to be reminded of it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? I mean, if this thing is so horrible, wouldn't it be self-evident to everyone that it's really bad? But instead, we are reminded of it everywhere we look at all times. That's suspicious, isn't it? Yeah. So really, the smart play is for this first round of vaccines to go through without too many problems. And of course, people are already dying, yes, but the numbers are low enough where they can be explained away. Because really, if you think about it, every single thing that surrounds this Operation COVID hoax has been based on deception, misinformation, disinformation, and confusion. You know, I was watching a clip from the enemy war transmission known as the mainstream news. And, you know, they said in the clip, as of today, 88,000 people or 88 million people have been vaccinated thus far. And then literally just a couple minutes later, on one of the little sidebar ticker things, you know, that goes by, it said that 130,000 or 130 million people had been vaccinated. Strategy of confusion. And of course, this new system is going to be based around vaccines. Go through and look at the World Economic Forum's 14 points that they want to accomplish. At least 7 of those directly revolve around vaccinating the public. But see, I believe the way it's going to go down is each new round of vaccine will work synergistically with the one before it and creating a very bad situation for people over time. But it has to be gradual enough to be blamed on external factors that have nothing to do with vaccines. I think that's the only play that they can do. And of course, they already have a new disease planned. The documents call it SPARS, St. Paul Acute Respiratory Syndrome, already planned for the years 2024 through 2029. You can go online and read the documents there. It's from the John Hopkins Institute, SPARS, S-P-A-R-S. And oddly enough, this I want to look further into John Hopkins because, you know, this organization is in the heart of this whole thing, has been from the very beginning, hasn't it? And I think the other long play is to make people actually dependent on vaccines to survive by essentially damaging people's immune systems enough where they are not capable of living in the biosphere that we call Earth without them, especially if they keep masking going as they plan to do. And, you know, they're already starting these tests on children. At this point, I think as young as 6 years old, but they want to vaccinate babies as low as 6 months old. I even heard Tony the Rat Fauci talk about that before. And of course, the long play involves the younger generations, the kids. And look at how they're reopening the schools, guys. It is dystopic at best. And, you know, their grand prize is the new generation, a generation that is essentially a blank canvas, a generation of children who will only know this new system. So anyway, guys, I'm not claiming to have some kind of crystal ball or, you know, I know exactly what's going down. I just wanted to offer a different perspective than what we're hearing by some of the, you know, big names in this alternative media, whatever you want to call it. So it's careful that we don't get set up so that we look like a bunch of nuts and kooks and go with the most extreme scenarios that might just be a setup for us. And here's another thing that's something to think about, guys. We don't hear much about the Chinese version of this vaccine. We don't know, at least I haven't heard how it's made or what the technology is behind it. I haven't heard much of anything that analyzes what this Chinese vaccine is, how it's made or whatever, you know? And could it be something completely different that is far less damaging to the people of China? Because I do believe that China is going to have a very big role in the future. And is this part of the plan to sort of weaken the West further by our own hand? I don't know. It's possible, though. And guys, here's another indication of this long game that they're playing. I'm sure everyone now, you know, has already heard of this Operation Lockstep from 2010 that came from the Rockefeller Foundation that essentially predicts exactly what is happening and, you know, almost precisely what the response would be. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? But there's another document from 2013, also from the Rockefeller Institute, and it's entitled Dreaming the Future of Health for the Next 100 Years. Dreaming the Future of Health for the Next 100 Years. Wow, think about that, guys. That's playing a long game, isn't it? Anyway, it's a white paper from the Global Health Summit of 2013 that was held in Beijing, China, of all places. January 26, 27 in 2013. And if you look through this paper, it's pretty boring, but some of the interesting highlights of it are that it predicts the death of physical interaction between humans. That we would interact primarily, you know, virtually and on a screen. And boy, is that ever being pushed, isn't it? In every aspect of our lives. Amazing. It also predicts a global health police. A global health police. That sounds like fun, doesn't it? Yeah. And what's interesting is that, you know, Dr. Fauci even stressed recently on an interview that we need a global monitoring system for health, a global health police. And as bizarre as this sounds, this document from 2013 predicts robots would be used to enforce health violations. Robots, think about that, huh? And there's even a scenario in this paper where robots go into a building that was violating health codes and demolish the building using robots. Wow, how bizarre, huh? And lastly, this document also predicts a massive decline in population. Yeah, isn't that interesting? So I just wanted to give a different perspective on this. And we'll just have to see where it goes. But we got to think long-term, long game. That's how these people are playing it. That much we know for sure. And that said, I would like to bring forward my main man and a man who is not afraid to name the people behind this conspiracy, a man with no fear or very little fear, Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Hey, Scorpio, great intro, man. You really pointed out some vital elements to this fifth generational warfare attack on us by the satanic Talmudic chicken swingers.
Okay, thank you. And also with us is Brutal Honesty, a.k.a. Chris Weinert. Chris, how are you doing, man?
Doing well, Dave. How are you guys, man? Great intro. Appreciate that. Man, you're really knocking them out of the park, not only with your guest list, but also with your commentary and your insight, man. I got a lot of stuff I want to add to some of your stuff, if you don't mind. You're asking about Johns Hopkins. Yeah, you want me to let it go for a minute? You know, the guy that was in charge of the Russell Trust was a guy named Daniel Coit Gilman. He was the one that actually put money from that to found Johns Hopkins. He was one of the founding members of the Skull and Bones, 1832. So, yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing there. You get into Skull and Bones and Johns Hopkins with that. Kind of a strange meeting in the aisle. I guess, you know, you see it once, maybe it's coincidence. You see it every time, and you start to really wonder. And this really ties into, like, the Federal Reserve and, like, the Jews taking it over and putting that thing out there, getting people off the gold and silver standards, getting them to embrace this, you know, debt-based system, you know, a reserve system, a fractional reserve system, more importantly. And they're kind of doing the same thing now with like, international debt and global debt and trying to really enslave people by these notions and turn it to the next level, I think. With not only these bailout bills, these stimulus things, but the crypto thing and everything like that. So I think you're seeing a tremendous transfer of risk and a tremendous transfer of wealth and property ownership. And it's really, you know, being guised as something different. This Corona thing or COVID thing is a cover fire for that. And I think this is really more what's going on. And, you know, you're talking about how can these guys keep getting away with all the people dropping from vaccines? Well, I was asking the same thing. How can they get away with this Corona hoax for as long as they have? And then I start thinking about, you know, what you were talking about on the online and the Biden CGI and the avatars, and Fetz are talking about this too. Like, you know, as far as deep fakes and having, like, you know, people that are maybe not real being out there pretending they're in a real situation. Like many of these instances with Biden, you see the White House not being, you know, the actual White House, and it's like a green screen or a double or a mock-up. A lot of interesting stuff going on with that. You think about social media and how they can use these tools as well. Like, say, Dave, you know, they could just get on your Facebook profile if you have one. I don't know if you do or not, but let's just say you do. And say, yeah, you're fine down there in Ecuador. You know, they have somebody that looks like you. It's an avatar. It's totally not you. And, I mean, you could have been black bagged 2 months ago. And as far as people know, they could be you. They could be, you know, putting like appearances of you out there, you know, with this fake thing where like you can take anybody's voice and make it sound like somebody else's. The CIA has some amazing stuff with this. And, you know, most people, if you talk about this, you know, they think it sounds like a Hollywood fiction. But this DARPA technology is very real. And this is some stuff that I think is possible. I'm not saying it's going on, but you're talking about going into the future and thinking about what they could be doing. I mean, in the nature of these quarantine, the healthy and these PCR tests, you know, serving as a basis for like these medical violations, man, I wouldn't put any of this stuff past them. I think if anything, you know, you're giving these guys, or many are giving these people, not you particularly, but many people are giving them the benefit of the doubt that they don't deserve. And they're certainly need to be looked at like the scum of the earth that they are, because this is not a new thing. They've been doing this like since the 1800s, 1900s as well, if not through Johns Hopkins. Then prior to that, you know, through like Ivy League schools and even Harvard and Yale. And then before that, you know, some of the Inquisition and like Red Cross tactics, you know, Paracelsus and, you know, the Edwards family. And man, there's just a long history of this Masonic connection to the vaccination program. And like you say, you said it perfectly, men trying to not only defy the will of God, but to play God. Man, these guys are literally trying to recreate the demigod that they probably once celebrated back when they held high technology over populations long ago. Maybe I'm thinking about that. Think about the wisdom they could have probably had. What are your thoughts, man? I know I'm a little bit all over the place, but man, I had a lot to say. You really provoked a lot of thought when you started talking there.
Oh, that's great, man. Excellent. And, you know, in the chat there, Justice149 is saying Hopkins Institute, with their experimental vaccine in 1918, used them at Fort Riley, where the pandemic, the so-called Spanish flu started. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts, man?
Well, this is all part of the plan, and you know, they tried it, as I showed yesterday on my show, the perfect triangle. They tried the same plan in 2009 with the swine flu, and the swine flu was so attenuated, weakened so quickly that all their doom and gloom fear porn was laughable. And my wife and I were discussing after the show that why has it only been 11 years and you've got the weak-minded libtards and the weak-minded mogoloids so obedient to it all. And 11 years ago, people could think and could, you know, discern what a scam it is, and now they can't see through the exact same scam. I mean, granted, subhuman Fauci had 7 years to tweak his weaponized contagion, so it had more bizarre effects, like the immediate loss of smell and taste, and the weird inflammation in other areas, such as the, you know, there's what, 13 cranial nerves, and the head of Texas Roadhouse blew his head off because his tinnitus was so bad, which is essentially, you know, inflammation of the cilia in the ear, which ultimately is caused by the inflammation of the auditory nerve, one of the cranial nerves. And anyway, the point is that we had this discussion, and she brought up the point that there's something going on in social media that is entraining and entrancing weak minds and making them more compliant and obedient. And I think that's it. There's something in all the time. I mean, people like us, our minds are strong, our wills are strong, we are, you know, spiritual beings. We're so beyond the goyim cattle, it's not even funny. But the goyim cattle is easily under this sway now, and that's the only thing that's changed in 09. I mean, in 09, who hardly anybody was doing much on social media. It was just something, a novelty, and now it's an addiction. It's a lifestyle.
Giuseppe, I think that there's more to it, like almost a bot army that seems to be out there, like in AIs, maybe steering them towards establishing consensus or perception management. That was kind of the long roundabout point I tried to make and failed earlier. But what are your thoughts on some of that stuff? I mean, we're kind of catching on to these games.
I agree with what you said earlier. I think it's a brilliant insight. It's fifth generational warfare. I mean, we are under attack by these these vile satanic Talmudic chicken swingers. I mean, they are literally a death cult.
Evil. They're evil. Yeah.
They're evil. Yeah. And we are under attack. And And when these, I can't even not comprehend the level of a weak mind. Oh, you're a Jew hater. I can't even comprehend somebody that weak in their mind and intellect that can't see what's being done to them. And oh, the poor Jew. You know, everybody knows a nice whatever, fill in blank, black Jew, white Indian, Vulcan, Cardassian, whatever, right? It doesn't matter. That's the interpersonal one-on-one thing. Most people one-on-one are nice to other people. The point is when you begin to factor in cults, organizations, alphabet soup agencies, that's when you get to see who your enemies really are. And for someone to be so weak-minded, oh, you're a Jew hater. It's like, why are you even alive? It's so ridiculous.
It's like fear in the straw boss narrative. It's how plantations were successful for hundreds of years, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I get your point, Giuseppe. And it's like, you have to go where the evidence leads you. You know, if the evidence leads us to that it's the Ferengi that are behind this, then that's where we have to go. It doesn't seem that's the case.
And people may not understand.
People probably the same percent of the population too.
People may not realize that someone had a sense of humor in Star Trek: The Next Generation, and they used every Jew trope, every stereotype to create the Ferengi.
I know, it's amazing the way they do business and the whole deal. Yeah. But yeah, you have to go where the evidence leads you. That's the bottom line. And isn't it interesting how that's, you know, you're a Jew hater. Well, that's the most forbidden part of the puzzle, isn't it, for some odd reason? You can talk about any other part of the conspiracy, but if you touch the elephant in the living room, then suddenly you're a Jew hater. And I just think we need to stay away from even letting that affect our thinking, because if you're looking for truth, you have to go where the evidence leads you. And Giuseppe, I thought the discussion you brought up with your wife is fascinating. What did happen to people? Because I remember in 2009, nobody cared. Nobody cared, and people just went on with their life. You heard the same calls for, it's a pandemic, by the World Health Organization and all this. But I remember just nobody cared, and life just went on. How did they pull this off to where the entire freaking world is wearing masks now? That's amazing.
It's the same companies doing it now that did it 10 years ago, which is even the crazier thing. And like, they just got deferred prosecution. It's like the same in the financial sector, if you look at it that way, too.
But you know? But Chris, what happened? What do you think happened to people that allowed this to manifest so strongly this time in comparison to 2009?
Well, I think that there's really been a strong dumbing down of America, and the political dialogue has been intentionally infantilized. I think that really there's probably some nanometals being pumped out in the skies from our own military in many cases that's probably not helping. Early onset type situations with average adult males, you know, people walking into rooms forgetting why. You know, there's a lot of short memories out there that are probably not normally this short. There's something sinister at hand that's probably more than just that. But I have to say that's probably a good place to start talking.
Yeah, it's amazing how things get rabbit holed down the memory hole so quickly. That's a good point. Very good point. Yeah.
Well, they have like the memory of goldfish, man. People forget all about this. They go on tomorrow, the next sensationalized act of violence or joy or feel good story or whatever, heartbreak, you know, and then they just forget about the last one. And it's like, man, these are major things. Like, you know, you're going to have, I think, two great guests on today, I believe, is again, that will talk about 9/11. And you think about like what they did with that and like all the put options and all the money that was made off of that. I mean, forget the theater. Forget about fighting over the semantics over what happened or what you think went on or what you know is happening. You know, think about this, the factual money, the physical wealth that has gone from this, and start there and start investigating. I'm not saying you or I can necessarily do this, but our law enforcement, if they were truly law enforcement, and looking to investigate these crimes, they would go at it in a scientific or some sort of a process, you know, investigatory process where they look into the cui bono and these things, and they haven't even looked there. And it's happening left and right, up and down. And when they do catch these guys, it's like Holder says, too big to jail. It's deferred prosecution. They paid, you know, 2% of what they stole, and it's business as usual. I mean, this is – something's got to happen. They keep doing this. And just literally the integrity of every bit of society and the social contract is being compromised by this manipulation.
Yeah, I thought that last night Mark Anderson made a great point where, you know, and I've thought this same thing, but he just said it so eloquently, which is that, you know, every major institution that we've been, you know, taught to trust is in complete and utter breakdown now. And it's because they've all been infiltrated by this same cabal. They control all of them, and they're intentionally being made useless so they can bring down the system without disrupting the system, which is a strange way to say it, but that's what's happening.
And in theory, the American military and the American army and the American, you know, financial system or regulatory institutions are and should be the last agency that it would be capable of taking down this criminal syndicate. However, this has been compromised by said criminal syndicate and is being used for a very malevolent purpose, we'll say, around the world. And it's the theatrics and the cover up is truly the art of this is because, like, they can pretty much take victims and make them look like attackers, and of course vice versa, and it's truly a war on perception and an inversion of decency. So, man, we're dealing with, like you said, sinister forces that are beyond evil, and it's like the average innocent person or good person couldn't even get their mind around the possibility, let alone the likelihood that this is happening. And I think that is why we're really struggling as far as establishing a dominant majority in fighting against this whole hoax, you know, this whole reset, this whole scam. I mean, it's all a house of cards and it's falling apart, and they're just trying to departmentalize it in different ways and just, you know, play, you know, fingers in the dam type thing, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It is coming apart. The financial system is unraveling like a cheap sweater, and they know that. They can only keep this going so much longer.
Hollywood too. Yeah. You know, think of that. That's coming undone. Politics coming undone. You know, the Trump thing, you know, the election fraud thing. I mean, it's getting pretty nasty out there where, like, these people are using the big money lawyers to pretty much dominate what is truth and what is not truth, even if it's true or not. You know, it's like the official narrative, and the big money is pretty much the quote unquote free speech.
Yeah. Yeah. Lawfare is a whole new thing, as Jim Fetzer has experienced firsthand. You know, Stephen Crawford of Fact or Theory Live, who's a, you know, a fellow host here on Revolution Radio. His show comes on 10 p.m. Eastern time, Sunday nights. And he's going to be coming on the show here next month. His theory here, he put in the chat, is that flu shots have given people brain damage. What do you think about that, Giuseppe?
Steven is a sharp, sharp guy, and he's absolutely right. But it's not just flu shots. It's every injection since 1986 when a young Tony the Rat Fauci convinced a gullible Ronald Reagan, scared him. If you don't indemnify, make these criminal Big Pharma biologics division, which is what they call the vaccine wing of Big Pharma, if you don't indemnify them, they're going to be sued out of business. Where, you know, and vaccines save everybody, which is just such an out and out lie. It's a religious cult pseudoscience, the cult of the white lab coat, the cult of the jab. But if it all changed in 1986, and it is every shot is full of the same adjuvants, mercury, human fetal tissue, cancer tissue, aluminum, and I could go on and on, and nagalase, which is a very insidious, about 200 natural doctors have been assassinated in the last 10 years for revealing nagalase, and which is robs you of your body's ability to process vitamin D through sunlight. And so that, again, makes you constantly sick and weakened immune function. And when your immune function, which is everything into your health, not these deadly, toxic, farcical vaccinations, your immune function, you eat healthy, you get enough rest, you get enough exercise, you get enough sunshine. Because of corporate farming, you have to take a mineral supplement, but it's got to be digestible, like a chelated mineral supplement. You need to augment with, you know, with like supplements that are essentially dehydrated real food. There's products that you take a couple of capsules and it's like eating, you know, a big plate of carrots and kale and all that. That's what you need if you're in an economic position where you can't, like Bill Gates and the elites, eat all clean and have your food prepared for you. And talk about an utterly satanic hypocrite. His children and have never been vaccinated. It was exposed by a doctor who was supposed to be under the HIPAA constraints, but he was so offended by Gates, he whistle blew. The family doctor said, "Yeah, Bill Gates has never jabbed any of his kids." So
I told you that, man. I bet he'll never eat an Impossible Burger. He will sure as hell not eat GMOs, but he'll sell them to you. He'll want your kids to take the jab. You know, this is exactly it. He's not going to get that interface crap he's trying to put into Jedi and Nightingale and all this crap.
Right.
You know, this is dirty what he's doing, man. This is war crime material, wouldn't you think?
Oh, crimes against humanity, absolutely. And
I mean, it's not like we're cows and we can have like a fourth stomach with a porthole drilled in so they can take the GMO toxic stuff they can't process out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, they're putting this everywhere. Walmart is like the distribution of this whole toxin. You know, just like in the 90s, you talk about the vaccine thing in the 80s. You know, another thing I had to add to that is like the nanofluorides they were putting in like Paxil and Prozac and all these things, the SSRIs they were putting everybody on and the effects that was having. And then rolling out, of course, the first generation of mind control and let's say psychic warfare drug technology mm-hmm. in conjunction with the drugs, you know, like Columbine and a lot of things like that were going on at the time, had a lot of possible connections to some of these other things too.
Hey man, Facebook fact checker just popped up on you, Chris, and it said that you are indeed a goyim cattle in the eyes of our rulers, the satanic internationalist Jew.
And the fact check says, too, in the future, people will have four stomachs, so don't worry. It's coming.
Right.
Fact checkers have debunked your concerns. Don't worry.
Yeah. Right. No cause for alarm. Please continue shopping.
There you go.
And Giuseppe, you brought up an interesting point, too, a very important point, which is it's interesting how any type of idea of, hey, make your body stronger, be more healthy, exercise, eat well, that's all gone, you know, down the rabbit hole. Now it's, hey, get your vaccine before it's too late.
Take this pill.
And I was hearing, where was it? They're even going to allow veterinarians to dispense vaccines and some other.
Dave, you can practically get these things at Arby's, man. It's no joke.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, go to Arby's and get your free vaccine. Buy a gun and get a free guitar. Yeah, I'll tell you, why not have plumbers hand out the vaccines and garbage men? When the garbage men go down near your neighborhood, they can vaccinate people. Why not?
Dave, I would say that arguably, like Tim Kelly says, that plumbers and organic farmers probably save more lives than anybody in a white coat calling themselves a doctor.
Listen, you got to understand one thing. You're so right. You don't even realize what you're saying, or maybe you do. But in the history of pandemics, there's never going to be another bubonic plague. There's never going to be a global pandemic unless it's such a heinous biological weapon of mass destruction that they're intent on killing billions of people. It will only be a man-made attack. And here's why. There's three reasons since the bubonic plague that there's never actually been another global, millions killed pandemic, and there never will be. Here's why. Number one, sanitation. During the Black Plague, the last one, there were open air sewers. You know, people dumped their human waste in gutters, literally, right? And so
people lived in those places, Giuseppe.
Right,
you know?
Right. And number two, sanitation. With the creation of bleach and other cleaning agents, you know, contagions are basically weak. I'm not going to say viruses because there's too much proof. Even Dr. Judy last week said viruses don't cause the disease. I didn't memorize how she put it. I got to go back. I've been trying to put that show up for a week on BitChute, and it keeps getting stuck in limbo. They don't want it up. I mean, I'm going to keep trying, but
yeah, anyway, BitChute's nasty.
The way that Dr. Judy explained that whole thing was the best I've ever heard on any interview anywhere, Giuseppe, and it was on your show. Amazing.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go and cut that out and put
that was
that
a up. Powerhouse 2 hours, man. That was a great show.
That was a great show. And so sanitation, bleach, they created bleach.
Yeah.
And so as long as you clean everything, you have, sewage properly handled. And the third element that will never cause another pandemic or prevent another pandemic like that. Nutrition, people back then were being starved by the oligarchs, and they and they had no access to citrus. They had no access to decent food. And so those are the three elements that have prevented every pandemic. I mean, it's such a joke.
And I'd only add potable clean water too.
Well, right,
because if you don't have access to that, then you got a big problem as well. But you're absolutely right, Giuseppe. That's such an important point, and I haven't really heard that said very often. That's really the key to modern civilization, and of course, the foundation of any modern civilization is agriculture. Healthy food.
These assholes have been shipping vaccines to these third world countries instead of any of these infrastructure programs. Look at that. Any infrastructure program that comes into being, they'll either take out that leader, they'll destroy it, they'll undermine it with the CIA, you know, all for resource extraction and exploiting the civilian populations and for controlling them too. This is not an accident. They are literally trying to, I think, exterminate people. And it's like you say, a level of plausible deniability, whereas if it fails or gets exposed, they can be like, oh, it was an oversight. It was a miscalculation. It was a mistake in the guise of public service. We tried to save you from COVID, or we tried to bring a vaccine for your, you know, instead of your infrastructure. Instead, you know, we brought you this
building. Yeah. Hey, man, it's not our fault if you got cancer, you know, 5 years after you took the vaccine. Come on, man. Life happens.
Hey, bro.
Yeah. Just because they introduced like two more suspects that are, you know, involved in the crime or cover up,
listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And, well, this hour we are joined by some very special people. We have the rebel madman himself, Mr. Mike Gatti, and Daryl Wayne, a retired pilot, a man of great wisdom, and someone that is, I think, a very unique person to talk to regarding 9/11. So, gentlemen, how are you, Mike and Daryl?
Doing very well, thank you.
Well, hi, Dave, Giuseppe, Chris, Mike. Wow, I'm doing great. We had some bad weather here in Alabama, but it's good now. I got to tell you, that was just an intense first hour, you guys. It was just, I was feeling what Chris is saying. You were very provocative. It's very provocative conversation that first hour. So much there. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Thought-provoking is the goal, I think. And I've been looking forward to this conversation all week because you and Mike together are such a meeting of the minds. And, you know, you guys both have such a great deal of information, but you approach things in different ways and you kind of push each other a little bit in the right direction. So, I've just really been looking forward to this. And guys, I thought I'd kind of start the conversation off this hour talking about 9/11 for a little while, because, you know, we recently interviewed Richard Page on the show, Addicted to Your Own Destruction, a few weeks back. And it was a really good interview. And it sort of just got my mind turning about 9/11 again. And Daryl, it's sort of a unique place to talk to you because I don't think there's anyone else that's in your position or saw what you saw that is willing to talk about anything. And so I just wanted to maybe kick off this hour. If you could sort of describe in a little more detail your experience flying over the World Trade Center and what you saw, and if you could just sort of recreate that day, and how many days after 9/11 was it? And maybe just go into a little more detail about that, if you could, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to preface it by my experience that day, or that week, rather, as one of my Forrest Gump moments, or... It wasn't anything particular or unique about me. I'm really not trying to draw any attention to myself over it. It was just the circumstances that were laid out in front of me, and I was the guy on the bubble, so to speak. On the Tuesday morning of 9/11, I was all dressed and ready to go to New York City to fly my normal airline route from Milwaukee. I flew for Midwest Airlines. No, I'm not bashful about saying that. It was a great company to work with and for, and great people. Well, I sounded like Trump there for a minute. I was using great too many times. And so I was all dressed up and ready to go in my little polyester airline captain's uniform. And we're eating breakfast, and we see what played out on the screen anyway. You know, the first airplane, the second airplane, and then... Or that's what they said it was. Of course, I understood I wasn't going to work that morning. And so we sat there and watched it. Anyway, so for the next 2 days, in theory, the airspace over the United States was shut down. And unless you were connected to the Bush family and the Saudis. So anyway, I'd had about enough of it after the first 6 hours of watching that on Tuesday, and shut it off and went over and picked out my favorite CD, which was happens to be Rachmaninoff. And I opened the windows and I cranked my stereo up to maximum volume because I had had enough of watching that. And so you wanted some detail. I'm kind of giving you some detail.
Oh, good.
And good. Yeah, so I looked around, and I didn't even pay any attention for the next 2 days. I didn't even look at the news. I didn't turn the TV on. I worked out in my yard building a fence. I said, well, I got some time off here. I think I'll just go build a fence. So I did that, and Thursday afternoon about 1 o'clock, my pager goes off. We still had pagers in, right?
Right.
And my pager goes off from crew dispatch. And listen, Daryl, we need you to come in tonight. We have a crew already lined up for you, that being a co-pilot and a couple of flight attendants. And we need you in here. I think it was around 5:36 o'clock, and we're gonna preposition you in a DC-9. It's an old DC-9, and we're gonna preposition you to Columbus, Ohio tonight. You're gonna spend the night in Columbus, Ohio. This is Thursday night, and you're gonna get up early on a Friday morning, and we have a special waiver and clearance from the Grand Poobah at the FAA in Washington, D.C., to allow the first operational passenger-carrying flight out of New York. I said, well, okay. You know, what else am I going to say? Okay. So that's what I do. I show up. The crew's standing there like deer in the headlights. They're all junior people. There weren't really any senior people, flight attendants. The co-pilot was brand shiny and new. He was actually from Finland. And he was a super nice young man, very good. Interestingly enough, I remember his name. It was Tron. Tron from Finland was my co-pilot. And so We talk about a few things, and we load up the airplane. We fly it to Columbus. We park it. We spend the night. We get up. And the next morning, we are now the first operational flight going into New York City after 9/11 that I'm aware of. If somebody else did it, I apologize. And so we're coming in from Columbus, which takes us brings us in south of Manhattan, over the what do they call that body of water there, Giuseppe, Dave, south of the Statue of Liberty. Anyway, we come over that big body of water, and we come down to about 2,500 feet above the water there, and they bring us up the East River, which is called the Maspeth Tanks Arrival into LaGuardia. And so we're cruising along there at about 200 knots. That's about 230 miles an hour for you land lovers. And 2,500 feet. And the East River is on the east side of Manhattan. And I was actually doing the flying, and I looked over at my co-pilot. I said, "Hey, Tron," I said, "I'm going to transfer the controls over to you. Do you mind? You want to fly this thing for a little bit?" And so we did a control transfer. He took control of the aircraft, and I pulled out my trusty camera, which I always had with me. And as we flew over the top of the World Trade Center complex and what was left of it, the remains, the carcass, I looked down in there, and I started taking pictures. So I have pictures. And you could see the glowing orange, reddish heat signatures all around the complex from stuff that looked to me like it was hot. This is 2.5 days later, right?
Two days later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't it go on a month or so? It was a while it was still molten, right?
Oh, this went on for, as I recall, Chris, I don't have a real specific timeline detail on that, but it seemed like it went on for quite a while that they were, as they were clearing the debris criminally. They encountered these actually running pools of molten something.
Okay. Yeah.
And
a month, yeah. Man. I don't know. It seems to me a lot, but man, that does that seem right?
Well, you know, jet fuel is just very, you know, jet fuel is so exotic that, you know, the heat is so. I'm being obnoxious here. No, it's kerosene.
That fuel caused this when you flew over it.
Repeat that. I lost you there.
So you weren't thinking that jet fuel was responsible for this when you flew over it, I assume.
No. No. If jet fuel had a habit of melting steel and high tensile strength metal, our engines on the jet aircraft would melt on a regular basis, you know.
Oh,
so,
Derek, what you remember? What went through your head when you saw that? What was the first thing you remember thinking when you saw that?
It ain't right. This story ain't right. That's why, actually, my crew was kind of freaked out because we were just kind of thrown out there without any direction, and that was part of my briefing when I, you know, met up with them. Was we're kind of on our own here. This is what we're going to do if we have any problems. And so I just sort of do what I typically do, is I take control and responsibility. And we didn't really have any issues, but we were literally thrown out there after this event as the first airline flight without any guidance. But to airline training credit and our company, which I repeat was a good company, we had exceptional training and discipline. and coordination, and we understood how to work as a team and a crew. We were a crew, and we depended upon each other, and we didn't, crews don't fight amongst themselves. Okay. If they do, they do not cruise very long. So, but I understood that, well, even before just watching the towers, I understood that this wasn't right. And I understood that the narrative over the next couple of days, what little bit I heard, wasn't correct. I understood none of it. I knew what I was being told, but I didn't know anything. Okay, I couldn't make any determination as to what was real or what wasn't, because it was conflicting narratives. There seems to be a theme with that, isn't there? A lot of conflicting narratives. This is an ongoing situation. I'll just break there for a minute to say that some of the parallels between what transpired in 9/11 and what's happened going forward from that period of time with and even the financial 2008 situation, I like that, just by the way, Dave, I really like your term for that, Operation COVID. This is the narratives are to be in lockstep and flood the zone. Okay. And this is what happened. This is what happened on 9/11. After the first couple of days, all the media outlets and talking heads and newsreaders got in line. They were put in line. They were in lockstep, and they flooded the zone. And the only way that you're going to even remotely acquire any accurate intel on a given event, which are actually processes, is in that first spontaneous reporting. That's in the first hours and days. That's where you'll find actionable intelligence. So. I did take pictures. I go back to flying there. I took pictures. Of course, I'm only over the target for, 30 seconds or so, if that. And we're, on to landing in LaGuardia, where we land. We pick up, I think it was like 80 people who were really kind of freaked out. Hustle on back to Milwaukee, and that was the end of the story for that day. But just me personally, I understood that I knew that I didn't know, and I didn't trust or believe what was being said, because my background was also being an instructor pilot, sim instructor, check airman, and a ground school instructor. So I was not only just driving airplanes, I was actually training airline pilots to be airline pilots and examining them and checking them. So I had a fairly good working understanding of what goes on in driving airplanes, heavy, fast airplanes, and complicated airspace and procedures, and none of them were followed. Okay, the air defense identification zone didn't appear to be in any kind of operation. Aircraft communication and intercept procedures weren't followed at any point in any of those supposed aircraft that were hijacked. There was no common strategy that took place and coordination between anybody. How do you do that? Well, that's not a coincidence, okay? Those aren't coincidences, and so that's kind of where I came from it on that day. I've been talking a lot here, and I haven't heard from my friend Mike either. So maybe I'll take a break, huh?
I just want to ask you one more question, then I want to kick the ball over to Mike and everyone else on the panel. And, this has been on my mind since we did the interview with Richard Gage. Daryl, in your opinion, you know a lot about the physics of flying and what's possible and what's not possible. You know, everyone's seen the footage of these airplanes just simply disappearing into the buildings. It just goes zip and it's gone, and it leaves a perfect impression on the outside of the building and the exact shape of the airplane. And I just want to ask you, is it possible for an airplane to enter a building like that and just disappear with absolutely no, material falling down the sides of the building whatsoever? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, it just all depends on the reality that you're dealing with. If you're watching a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd cartoon with that's all possible. Okay, so otherwise not so much.
Divers, there was no splash, there was nothing. It was just, it went right in, like Dave said, man. That looked like CGI.
Bad CGI.
Do not believe your lying eyes. Whatever you do, do not believe your lying eyes. And maybe this is just kind of a really convenient place to insert something you were talking about earlier in the first hour, Dave. Plausible deniability. And plausible deniability through propaganda is not for the theys that are perpetrating and perpetuating this. Plausible deniability is not for them. Okay. People misunderstand the significance and the importance of propaganda and plausible deniability. It is for you. The plausible deniability is for you. And that's what the propaganda and the narrative is designed to create. It's not for them. It's for you. You got it bass ackwards here.
Like as far as processing your emotions or your perceptions in the face of something this magnificent or this extravagant, is that what you mean?
Absolutely. It's a trauma. It's a trauma event. I've heard you talk before, Chris. I know you perfectly are aware and understand the construct of how to conditioned response and fear-driven trauma and this is what this is. So the plausible deniability is to provide a narrative that in a traumatic situation is plausible to you, and of course when it's reinforced. So it goes along the basic laws of learning. There's three steps in the basic laws of learning. The first step is primacy. What you first learn is very important. And then there's intensity. So the intensity of the primal event or the first occurring learning conditioning process, that first one, if it's intense, is even driven deeper into the consciousness and subconsciousness. And then the third requirement for is repetition. Mm-hmm. Of course. So this is not exotic stuff. This isn't gee whiz. This is how we developed simulator instruction courses and ground school courses. this isn't rocket science. This is very well understood and known. So it's primacy, intensity, and repetition. This is also known as flooding the zone. Right? Yeah. And
basic psychology. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just also wanted to say, and then I need to be quiet. You know, you were talking about the Goyim. And I just found that I found myself ruminating on your conversation. You know, I found it, you know, as a that was supposed to be a joke. I was ruminating on it as a cow would, chewing on it. So I'm sorry. It was, let me ruminate on that for a while as a goyim. So you know, you have to be careful with Semitics because they use semantics. I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm anti-semantic. And Chris, I have a question for you. Do you know what the Jewish paradox is? Are you familiar with the Jewish paradox? They have a pair of dogs. No? Okay. Well, the Jewish paradox is a free ham sandwich. They really struggle with that one. So with you got to have a little fun once in a while here.
That's really funny. That's really funny.
Okay.
Give Michael. Well,
I want to kick things over to Mike. I know you guys are, you know, actually, you know, friends in real life, and you guys actually even had lunch at a restaurant without getting kicked out of the restaurant together. So, Mike, why don't you jump in and what do you want to add to this, or where do you want to take this, Mike?
Well, that was enjoyable listening to my friend DW there. I like his conundrum, his Goyim conundrum. Daryl, I couldn't help, before I get into my experiences on 9/11, there's one thing I want to ask, Daryl, as an accomplished pilot, as a pilot instructor. Very few people are familiar with the almost acrobatic, aerial acrobatic move performed by one Hani Hanjour, allegedly, as he circled, went by the Pentagon, circled, came back, and flew was that a 757, Daryl?
Yeah, yeah. I believe that was an American Airlines 7, supposedly.
Okay, allegedly. American Airlines 757,
yeah.
So he flies that, he does, again, aerial acrobatics. Here is a man who couldn't land a Piper Cub in his training. So he does a aerial acrobatic with a 757 and flies it into the Pentagon. Please explain to the people from your professional point of view if that was possible for an accomplished pilot, much less someone who couldn't land a Piper Cub. And would you also explain to the people the stress on the aircraft?
Yeah, well, see, he was an expert camel driver, so I'm sure he had some skills he could transfer over to. I'm sorry, I'm just a little bit rude today. No, I'm not sorry. I think the maneuver he was purportedly performed was a descending high speed, not low speed, a high speed, high altitude descending turn in a corkscrew manner, where he comes out in alignment with one of the sides of the Pentagon there, and he is so proficient and highly skilled that he is able to overcome obstacles and the ground effect of flying a large wingspan aircraft very close to the ground at incredibly high speed, which is also known as ground effect. The speeds that he was supposedly operating at, which were well in excess of the design limits, under 10,000 feet. So the air density, the mass, and the air mass is much denser at sea level. It decreases as you go up higher. There's less air, so there's less air pressure. But when you're operating at sea level, which is basically right at about where the Pentagon's at, you know, the air mass is at its highest density, and henceforth puts the highest structural pressures on the airfoils. And so, 1 to 10,000 feet, most of these aircraft are severely speed limited, actually, so that they're not overstressed. Compounding his situation, he was in a descending turn, which means that he was in a bank angle and experiencing additional load factor, what you might call it a G factor, we call it a load factor. And this adds another level of stress upon the wings and the tail and the control surfaces and the overall design structure of the aircraft. Well, he's able to overcome all these aerodynamics and physics and do this high-speed descending turn and line up perfectly well with one side of that building and hit it at a pretty much at a right angle, square to its face. Wow. So after 9/11, we in the airline business and the crews where I worked at, we would go to Atlanta to the outside of Hartsfield Airport and do our check rides and upgrade training and all sorts of training and evaluation. And as captains, you would do this every 6 months, and they would block out an hour and a half or 2 hours for you to perform these events, training or otherwise. And typically, you know, after you've done about a couple dozen of these, you get pretty proficient at it, and you meet all the criteria, and you get your ticket stamped again, and you got a half an hour to kill. Okay, and the sim's been paid for, and so you might as well use that because they're going to charge you for that sim for that block of period, whether you are sitting in there doing it or not. So we like to play. We like to go in the simulator and play. Now these are like $60 million simulators that actually are very good at simulating the physics and the airports and the terrain and all the parameters of flying, and preloaded into all these airport these simulators where we were at. They had New York City and they had Chicago and they had different approaches at different airports, and they would also have the terrain and they would actually have the geography, topography of the buildings just amazing. And so what we did is after 9/11, it became sort of a game with most of the flight crews. And I mean, this must have been tried hundreds of times. I know I did it at least a half a dozen times. We would position the simulator to New York. We would put it at like a 1,000 feet altitude, and we would start 10 miles away from the World Trade Centers that were being depicted on the simulator, and we would punch the go button and bring the aircraft up to about 300 knots, okay, which is way beyond what it should be doing at that altitude. Okay, you really shouldn't be over 250, and we would fly in a straight line in the simulator by hand, no electronics assisting. We would fly by hand in the simulator, starting in a straight line, pointed directly at the trade centers, and then try to hit them. Okay, no turning. No changing altitude, nothing. Just concentrating visually out the window and try to hit them. And I never could do it.
Wow.
I was never able to do it. Not once. And I admit I'm not the best pilot that I flew with. There was a lot of great sticks there. I was merely acceptable. And all the really good ones, the guys that were really known in the airline to be sticks, they couldn't hit it either.
Wow.
So
that,
Carol,
you ever,
I'm sure.
Marshall,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Does it count about that?
I'm
ever read any books from Philip Marshall?
Wait. We're talking over each other, guys.
No,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
just asking you if you ever read any books by Philip Marshall. He wrote two books, and even a third one, I think, about that. He was another pilot. I think he actually used to fly with Evergreen, one of the, I think, a CIA front, really, is what he claimed. Ironically, the same company that's caught in the Suez Canal right now, but a shipping division of it. Anyways, long story short, he had a similar account, though, that you just said. He had been flying for a long time, I think almost 30 years, and he couldn't do it either. That's so don't take it too personal.
No, I understand why we couldn't hit it. Based upon our experience, it was, you know, it's not reasonable to think that you were going to hit it. Even with a wide wingspan aircraft, Philip Marshall is the cat that they offed him and his dog right out there. So he was a serious cat because he actually knew what was going on. That's why he got hit like Bill Cooper did. But listen, just real quickly, Evergreen is a CIA op or international banker or whoever you want to call it. I personally had conversations with John McRaney, who was the director of operations for Evergreen, doing heavy lift out of Vietnam, started out of Vietnam hauling dope and then got into the gun running in South America and Honduras. He was their director of operations for, I don't know, 25, 30 years. He was long, tall, lanky Texan that wore cowboy boots and a hat, and he was a really nice guy to talk to. And I had the opportunity to spend a couple of days with him on some different aviation matters. So Hassan Fuss worked for him.
Wow.
And it's Air America. Evergreen is their heavy lift section and heavy transport. So that's part of your deep state, it's probably a, you know, deep state shadow government, however you want to call it, however you want to identify it. So that's all real. More of my Forrest Gump. I had another Forrest Gump moment.
Happy, so, you jump in, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd much rather listen to Daryl. He's got firsthand knowledge and expertise that's just stunning. I guess in the chat, you know, this may be not relevant, but it seems to always pop in. To me, how it happened isn't relevant, but cui bono, who did it, is the only thing that matters with 9/11. But what are your thoughts? Have you looked at all at the directed energy weapon versus the directed nuke destruction? Because clearly it wasn't kerosene and it wasn't thermite.
Well, I don't want to sound like I'm, pandering or a non-determinate sort of guy on this idea. I've always, after I started really doing critical and objective looking and reading and listening to Judy Woods and Richard Gage and just a, you know, Loose Change and all these people over the years, right? We've all seen them. And here's my conclusion. The how... was a recipe with a lot of ingredients. Did it have directed energy? Well, why not? Were there many nukes from Israel that they had stolen? Why not? Was there shaped charges put on the beams with thermite? That seems pretty obvious there was. Could they have used all of them? I say yes. Yeah, I say all of the above. I mean, come on. When you make a cake, do you just use eggs and flour? Is that the end of it? No. How many ingredients do you have? You know, but everybody wants to get their panties up in a knot about their favorite possibility. So, you know, it's the how will never lead to any justice. The how will never do that.
Exactly.
And
I just like to interject.
It never. That, yeah.
that I think Richard Gage is the living embodiment of the Warren Commission.
Yeah, even like the JFK thing. Look at all those different snipers. You could argue one shot them from here or from there. They had like 7-8 guys firing at them, you know? So, I mean, you could say it was nanothermite. You could say it was, you know, whatever. I mean, but arguably, like you said, Giuseppe, it is the cui bono, and that's what you got to look at and what the objective was. Look what they brought in with the Patriot Act, the authorized use of military force, trailblazer stuff with NSA. I mean, they went full in with this. I mean, we got some great people here to talk about this with.
Well, yeah, and Chris, yeah. You know what? Parallel to what Mike was just, I mean, what Daryl was just talking about is that, you know, when Jesse Ventura brought together some sharpshooters from the Navy SEALs and other military organizations, nobody could make the same shot from the Dallas building. Nobody could do it.
A lot of parallels.
Well, let me give you a little, yeah, we're having a good time here. And, well, I'm not going to live forever, right? So I'll just give you some firsthand experience and information and knowledge that's actionable. If any law enforcement people up in Milwaukee are listening, you know, back in 2010, fall of 2009 and winter or spring of 2010. And I had the opportunity to go work for Midwest Airlines had been sold off, and I started my own business, and business sucked because of 2008 financial crisis. And I was looking for some income outside of flying airplanes. And then some guys that I'd trained and worked with before told me that there was a flying opportunity job out of the Milwaukee Mitchell Field Airport. And a bunch of those guys were over there working. And I go, really? Yeah, we're going to be flying Beechcraft 1900Ds, and we're being trained, and we're going to be operating out of Afghanistan. I said, really? I said, what's that pay? And they said, well, it's $100,000 for 6 months. You can waive a return and do another 6 months tour, and so that would be $200,000 tax-free for driving a 19-seat turboprop Beechcraft 1900. Of course, these aircraft were specially fitted in Air Force versions that had electronic surveillance and camera taking, photographic capabilities and communications. They were very sophisticated. And I said, well, great. I said, this sounds like something I could use right now because my business is not doing well and I could use some money. I got to pay property taxes in Milwaukee, for Pete's sake. And I said, what's the job? Well, and that's when they started shutting up. So, well, we can't really tell you. Well, interestingly enough, the guy that was ahead of training for this little company here in Milwaukee at the General Mitchell Airport was somebody I had actually trained before, and I knew him very well. Knowing him, I tell you his name right now, I'll pass on that, but he was in charge of hiring and the training and crewing. And I went in, I talked to him, I gave him a resume. I said, well, you know, here, I'll just use his first name. I said, here, Gary, give me a call back. I'm interested in see what it is. Well, I still wanted to know what the job was because nobody was telling me. What was the mission? So nobody would tell me. And so finally, I had this one guy I knew really good. He'd been one of my co-pilots at the airline. I got him over to my house over in Bayview. I put on some big steaks. I got some outstanding liquor. And I fed him and got him drunk. It works. And he started running his mouth, and at the end of the night, I knew what they were doing. And what they were doing is that air cargo carriers on Layton Avenue, okay, you people up in Milwaukee, take notes now, because I'm telling you, all you plausible deniers, air cargo carriers on Layton Avenue, they had a little company called Air Cargo Carriers that was under contract from the Air Force to staff and train and man and deploy flight crews for the Beech 1900D to fly over Afghanistan. And the Air Force was under contract from the CIA. And the mission was to fly high cover and protection for the opium and poppy fields for their production facilities. Okay. Okay. So I didn't take the job once I found out what it was for. Okay. So another Forrest Gump moment for me. And that's not a conspiracy off the internet. That's not somebody blathering on. This is real. And, you know, for all you deniers out there, you don't know what you're talking about. You're idiots. And you want plausible deniability. You want your damn benefits of being a U.S. moron where you can believe a lie and still feel good about your sorry little selves. Well, stick that in your pipe. So, wow. People don't want to know the truth, guys. They just don't want to know it.
Trust the plan.
They just don't want to know it. They don't want to know it. All right, go put on your little toy uniform and take your orders and be obedient and take your dose of red, white, and blue flu. I don't want to hear it. Okay,
that's great. So,
I gotta stop.
Open up the door to people believing patriotic lies. Let's get Mike Gatti in here because that's right up his alley. Mike, what do you want to add in, man? Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to get on record DW because he and I have talked about this on multiple occasions. I certainly wanted to get his story of actually experienced pilots with thousands of hours of experience being unable to perform the aerial maneuvers that our government claims that these novice pilots who couldn't land a Piper Cub were capable of. So I wanted to get that on record for sure. My 9/11 day experience was quite a bit different. I was in Tucson, Arizona at the time. That morning, my daughter comes in and says, hey, Dad, you might want to come watch this stuff on TV. She knew I didn't watch TV. You might want to come see this. Something's happening. So I go in, and it's between the first and second planes hitting the World Trade Centers. And so shortly thereafter, we see the plane hit the second World Trade Center. And I'm thinking, you know, what the hell is going on here? Something just doesn't feel right, especially when I was totally aware of Secret Service protocols. And for the Secret Service to know that America was under attack, and it was being said as much on TV, what the hell were they doing with the President of the United States sitting in a classroom talking about a goat? Protocol would have required he be immediately, from the first hint of something happening, of America being, quote, under attack, he would have been removed post-haste from such an environment. But that was my first clue. Something is not right here. Well, shortly thereafter, I get a phone call, and they give me my orders for the day, and I am to go to Flagstaff, Arizona, and I am to pick up some folks in Flagstaff, Arizona, and I am to take those people to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then I'm supposed to meet some more folks in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm sorry, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I apologize. And then we were to go to Santa Fe. So I leave, and while I'm on the way, I get a call on my cell phone. The call that I receive is from one of my old associates in the No Such Agency. And so he says, hey, Mike, have you seen this crap that's going on? And I said, yeah. I said, what's your read? And he said, Operation Northwoods actually implemented. And I said, what? And he said, yep. He said, you remember it. He said, look at the similarities. Look at how it was planned. And I said, oh, okay. And so we talked for a while, and then we ran into some signal problems as I was traveling up Interstate 17. So then I get to Flagstaff, I pick up the people I'm supposed to pick up, and I start heading for Albuquerque. And so shortly after, well, I think as a matter of fact, I'm sitting in the hotel parking lot in Flagstaff, and I get a call from a very close friend who was at the Pentagon, who is a had two PhDs in international relations. And I get a phone call from this Air Force colonel, and she said, "Have you heard about the Pentagon being hit?" And I said, "Yes, I heard that." She said, "It was not a damn plane." And I said, "Pardon me?" And she said, "Yes." She said, "We went outside." She said, "It was not a plane that hit the Pentagon. I promise you it was not a plane." And I said, "Well, from someone in the Air Force, I would think you would have pretty good knowledge of that." She said, "It was not a plane." So anyway, that night I get into Albuquerque. I'm in a nice fancy hotel in Albuquerque, and the streets are deserted. It was an eerie time in America. And so I'm in the hotel room, and I get a phone call from the gentleman who called me the first time. And he said, "Hey, man, what's your read on it now after you've had a chance to look at this?" And I said, "Well, what the hell is this building that collapsed right before dark? What's up with that one? World Trade Center 7, I think it's called. What's up with that one?" I said, "Wasn't hit by anything." And he said, "Yep." He said, "Ironic, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, something's going on." And then he said something. He said, "Mike, if you want to get to the bottom of this," he said, "a lot of people in a lot of countries just made billions of dollars on this." And so then he went into the men who were arrested in New Jersey, who were dancing around cheering as after the planes hit and they were filming. And he said, he's the first one to tell me, "Well, you do know those guys were art students from Israel." Well, we immediately both start laughing.
Yeah.
Because we had in prior times in our intelligence careers encountered art students from Israel. So then he said,
"Wow."
When we were talking, I think it was either that night, late that night, or early the next morning, and I'm waiting for the people to arrive who never arrived. I ended up going back to Tucson. But anyway, he says the next day, I think it was, he said, "Look at the stock market." He said, "Billions and billions of dollars were made in the stock market." He said, "From many, many sources." He said, "Look at this. Go into it." He said, "You're going to find the answer there." And he went into a lengthy scenario of how 9/11 was actually pulled off that day. And, you know, it's anyone who heard it would immediately say conspiracy theory. So I'm not going to jump into that. But I started doing an extensive search into. Most people are unaware that the FBI has a program to where they go into do real-time monitoring of the stock market, looking for insider trading, they've got programs. They've got actual programs. There's not people sitting listening to this. There are computer programs which real-time take these transactions and analyze those transactions as to anything being out of sorts. Well, one of the first things that this program picked up on, I am told, was the put options on American and United Airlines in the 5 days preceding 9/11. They were huge. Well, what you're doing when you buy a put option is you're betting your money that the value of that stock is going to fall. Well, the issue then becomes, why only United and American? In proportion, the put option purchases on United and American were over the top. No other airline saw the same level of activity. So who made billions on this? So many governments throughout the country began to do investigations into this, what we call insider trading. Insider trading is nothing but the people are told what's going to happen beforehand. And that's critical when you come to 9/11. If people were running out and doing financial transactions that would make them billions of dollars once 9/11 happened, people, that is absolute unvarnished truth that it was a planned event. I mean, you don't have to be, a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist to figure that out. But investigations were initiated in the governments of Belgium, Cyprus, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Luxembourg, Monte Carlo, the Netherlands, Switzerland, United States, and many others. Okay, what do all of those countries have in common? It's called the International Banking Community. Mm-hmm. And it, although allegedly the investigators were clearly concerned about insider trading and considerable evidence did exist, not one of those investigations in any of those countries, gentlemen, led to one single indictment. They admitted that people were making trades that were very, very, very suspicious, but no one gets indicted. And guess what? I don't believe the 9/11 Commission really touched on this to any great extent. But here is why they said no one was indicted. They said because at the time, or, you know, right after 9/11, the people identified as having been involved in all of these suspicious trades in all of these countries were seen as unlikely to have been associated with anyone alleged to have committed the 9/11 crimes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, guys. Flip over.
Okay, already at the top of the hour. Stay tuned. Mike finished. I know that Chris wants to jump in on this financial irregularity thing, too. So everyone will be back. Okay, guys. Welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. We've been having a really interesting conversation with Daryl Wayne, Mike Gatti, the Rebel Man-Man himself, Chris Weiner, a.k.a. Brutal Honesty, and Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. And right before the top of the hour, Mike was going into some very interesting, you know, financial irregularities, let's say, that were never prosecuted or really sort of ignored in the at the end of the story. But I want to get Chris's reaction to some of the things that Mike brought up, because I know Chris said he wanted to maybe get going here. So, Chris, why don't you jump in here? And I know you're chomping at the bit to get some information out about this financial stuff. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, well, I just want to point out that many of these situations, these disaster capitalist tragedies that are exploited to usually extract the constitutional or natural rights from the citizens are pretensed and orchestrated for a purpose to cover up a pre-existing crime or a series of crimes. You know, I remember like Mike was talking about Tower 7 just going down mysteriously. That was crucial because it held a lot of information of the intelligence agencies and the FBI about not only domestic quote-unquote terrorism cases, but even some about financial cases, including things up to like Whitewater and you know, the MENA Arkansas connections and stuff like this. So there's a lot of stuff that was taken out in terms of information in these intelligence agencies as an excuse from 9/11. And also, there was $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon budget that was conveniently ignored after this. And even a lot of the companies that were involved with that $2.3 trillion missing were probably involved with some of the targets that were hit there with Marsh McLennan and Marietta and you know, becomes Lockheed. So there's some interesting, strange bedfellows there. And even, like Mike was talking about the put options, great point. I'd also like to add that there's, you know, the Enron thing came up and it served as a way to mask a lot of the corruption from this type of stuff. It reminded me a lot of the Iran-Contra stuff in the 80s, where they did the savings and loan, the Franklin scandal, the Keating Five, all these departmentalized busts, you know, the Drexel, Burnham, Lambert, the Milken junk bonds. they did a bunch of departmentalized busts and like kind of make it look like it was a separate series of incidents that were being regulated and cracked down to lend the illusion of diligence. But clearly it was more like a big corrupt enterprise that was never even being pointed out by the media or anybody else in the structures of power. And I think it happens a lot. It almost happens every 10 years or every generation where the deep state kind of hangs out the deep state and regulates itself. So I want to point out the similarities of that in the past. And even some of the things like as far as put options, GE TEPCO, the BP stuff, all these guys were not only shorting their stocks as on the Mahogany Row, the executive board of directors, but also they were participating in a lot of put options and insurance things, very similar to Lucky Larry Silverstein and his lucrative contract with the Twin Towers. So, yeah, I just I appreciate you guys bringing this up in conversation and stuff that a lot of people that are just waking up maybe might not have paid attention to. So it's good to give the opportunity to present this. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate all the work you're doing.
Hoy vey, Lucky Larry.
Yeah, great stuff, Chris. Really excellent. Mike, why don't you react to what Chris was saying and continue with your train of thought there?
Okay, good point, Chris. I think it's critical that we look again at the absolute frickin' hilarity of the 9/11 Commission. And listen to what they said about these trades and their 9/11 Commission report, who probably most people have never read and most people don't want to, but it's very interesting when you get into it, because the Commission concluded that exhaustive investigations by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Federal Bureau of Idiots uncovered no evidence that anyone with advanced knowledge of the attacks profited through securities transactions, unquote. What they meant, or what it should have been said, what you didn't read, is that someone did profit through all of these transactions, but based on the commission's assumptions of who was involved in this heinous act of 9/11, that the people who profited were not connected with it, so let's forget about it. In a footnote to the 9/11 Commission report, they said, and I quote, "There was highly suspicious trading on its face." But then, ironically, they said that this huge trading on United Airlines on the put options was traced back to, and I quote, "a single U.S.-based institutional investor with no conceivable ties to Al-Qaeda." So the 9/11 Commission, without an investigation, decided who was guilty and who would not have been able to profit or been associated with the guilty parties. What with connections to that trading, I think it was huge, but the Commission's report was highly suspect. But very informative is the fact when you dug into this, and I wrote an article about this in 2002, but when you dig into this, the informed trades relating to 9/11 covered far more than just the airline company put options. The stocks of financial and reinsurance companies, as well as other financial vehicles, were identified as being associated with these trades. Huge credit card transactions completed just before the attacks were also very suspect, and people made huge amounts of money. The 9/11 Commission ultimately tried to frame all of this highly suspicious trading in terms of a series of misunderstandings. However, the possibility that so many leading financial experts were so completely wrong is doubtful at best, and if true, would constitute another unbelievable scenario in the totally improbable sequence of events represented in the official story from the government and from the 9/11 Commission. Now, ironically, and nobody's going to pay attention to this because Americans have the attention span of an Irish setter, and that's being tough on the dog. But here is something. In later investigations, one in 2006 and one in 2010, financial experts established new evidence through statistical analysis that informed trades did occur with respect to the 9/11 attacks. Additionally, in 2007, the 9/11 Commission released a memorandum summary of the FBI investigations on which it based its report. And it says, a careful review of this memorandum indicates that some of the people who were briefly investigated by the FBI, briefly, think of TWA 800, briefly investigated by the FBI, and then acquitted without due diligence, had links to Al-Qaeda and to U.S. intelligence agencies. Well, if you had links to a U.S. intelligence agency, you automatically had a link to Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda was created by the U.S. intelligence agency. Although the elapsed time between the informed trades and these new confirmations, stop and think about it, guys. We know this in 2001, 2006, 2010, 2007. We have very detailed reports that actually connect the dots on this. But guess what has happened in the meantime? They can't be prosecuted now. Too much time has elapsed. Does anyone anyone think that was just a coincidence?
Well, that's funny, Mike, how you went into how the FBI, you know, briefly investigated, you know, TWA 800 and other things, but nothing really came of it. But they're making damn sure to get every one of those evil people who went into the Capitol building and took a self-guided tour. That's the top priority. We got to stop those dangerous people.
Hey, Dave, didn't the FBI have something involved with the first bombing of the World Trade Center in 93, back in February, I believe, where it was like an FBI informant and another undercover FBI agent that were two out of the three people involved as suspects? Ramzi Youssef was the other, I believe.
Yep, that was exactly correct, guys. And not only that, but the thing that didn't come out was the fact that the FBI provided Youssef with the explosives.
Oh, wow.
I'm glad I brought it up. Thanks for giving me the chance.
Sure.
Chris, is there anything you wanted to delve into regarding the financial aspect of this, man?
No, I'm going to be listening, but I'm just not going to be on the panel. But yeah, please, man, just keep going, guys. I'm loving this. You guys are doing a great job.
Okay.
Steppy,
why don't you jump in?
All right.
Oh, Daryl, go ahead.
Well, I just, since Mike, went down this path, the ongoing saga of this line of thought and reasoning and research is a guy by the name of Bradley Birkenfeld and Lucifer's Banker. He writes a book called Lucifer's Banker, and he ends up in prison, and he's exposing the international crime syndicate with bonds and the Swiss banking system that is, I would propose, is at the heart of the financing and money laundering of all these planned aggressions. I refer to these things not as false flags, but they're planned aggressions to move people and to accomplish objectives. Tangential to Brad Birkenfeld is a young man named Scott Bennett, and Scott Bennett is exposing the relationship between the Swiss banking system, Interpol, and who colludes with the banking system. Interpol is a international banking policing agency. And Scott Bennett does really good yeoman's work and was imprisoned for doing so, of exposing the financing of these operatives who are conducting these planned aggressions. So that's just another line of inquiry that resulted in Brad Birkenfeld and Scott Bennett both going to prison for actually doing their job. So,
what was the conclusion that Birkenfeld came to in his book Lucifer's Banker?
Uh, his conclusion. Well, he was bought off.
He spent
2.5 years in the slam, in the federal slam, and then was given a $104 million payout and let out of jail if he kept his mouth shut. So I don't know. When was the last time, you know, a convicted, so-called convicted felon was given $104 million and then went quiet? I don't know. So it's just corroborating information about how deep and twisted all this information is. And I agree with Chris and Michael. You know, if you don't follow the money, then you'll never know the story. The sorry part about it is, from my point of view, is even if you do follow the money and you do actually come to a reasonable understanding of what truth is, there will be no justice because we are completely subsumed and occupied by the administration of what is the one world government. It's in place and it's in effect now, and there will be no justice, period, through their processes and peculiarities. It will never happen. So you know, I don't know, it's kind of a big statement. Those are my conclusions anyway, for what it's worth.
Well, yeah, and I agree. Because you know, these New World Order operatives, they're given complete immunity from any and all crimes they commit. We've seen that play out over again, and it's hard to come to any other conclusion, quite frankly. Giuseppe, we haven't heard from you, man. Why don't you jump in with a question or comment, man?
Well, I would say that it's amazing the similarities of 9/11 to the COVID scamdemic of the last year. Any thoughts from Daryl or Mike on that?
Oh, Giuseppe, I was thinking about the exact same things. I mean, look at how many people have profited from this and compare that to the people who suffered. The people who have lost their businesses, you know, the thousands of small businesses that no longer exist in this country. But look at the people who have become just absolutely filthy wealthy over the entire thing, including Fauci and Gates and Bezos at Amazon and all of these other people. There's no way in the world they'll ever be able to spend all this money. And yet, they just keep getting more. And I think a great investigation at some time will come on all of these stimulus monies that have been sent out, because we know sending Americans $1,200 out of $1.9 trillion is a mere pittance. So where is the other money actually going to? And these are just payoffs. That's all it is. But the American public's not smart enough to figure it out.
Yeah.
And there's like dollars. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Daryl. Daryl, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, listen, the parallels, other than what I mentioned before about lockstep and flooding the zone as far as the narrative goes, the other parallels are the response of the so-called peoples, and they allowed themselves the space, their emotional space, to go along with the false narrative put out by the U.S. media and the government. They went along with JFK and the obviously false and corrupted Warren report. So it's very simple for me. I mean, there's a pattern here. If you go along with the Warren report and flood the zone and you're in lockstep, then you can commit more atrocities and absurdities. You can then commit 9/11. If you go along with 9/11, I'm talking about the American people, then you can go ahead and do a murderous war of aggression against Iraq and destabilize the entire Middle East to maintain hegemony. Then if you continue to go along with that Zionist interpretation of reality and perspective, then you can also believe what was told you about the financial crisis of 2008. If you continue to go along with that, then they can perpetrate Operation COVID. Thank you, Dave. And so there's a pattern here. And there's a pattern that I have to point my finger and wag and go tis, tis, tis to the American people, because you keep going along. You keep consenting. You keep complying. You keep being obedient. You are the problem.
But Daryl, every 4 years they get all worked up and vote for change.
Yeah, well, that's what they're getting right now. They're getting the change in their pocket. They're getting the change, Giuseppe. Don't you hear it rattling? Tinkle, tinkle. And that's all. We know what kind of people act in all actuality. American people are, and we know the price is cheap. You know, it's like the old joke. You know, the multimillionaire asks the sexy actress, would you sleep with somebody you didn't know for $1 million? And she goes, well, sure. Right? You've all heard the joke. And then he says, well, wait a minute. He says, would you do it for $5? And she goes with disgust in her eyes and flashes her eyes at him and says, well, what kind of woman do you think we are? And he says, well, I think that's already been determined. We're just haggling over the price now. So this is what's happened with the American people. They're just haggling over the price now a little bit. And Americans' price is cheap. And it's getting cheaper every day, literally and figuratively. So if you go along with this, if you continue to go along with this, you're going to keep getting what you always got. And it's going to increase, and it's going to become more severe. And part of the reason I think people do it, guys, is they know they're not viable. They're vulnerable, and the longer this goes on and the deeper we go into this whole social political scenario, the more vulnerable and unviable people become, and that informs their behavior. It's not real complicated. So,
But Daryl, you're forgetting, buddy. We've got this do-all thing that's going to protect us from all of this stuff. All of this stuff is just a bad dream because we have a constitution. And this constitution is preventing all of this stuff from happening. This is just a bad dream. We're going to wake up tomorrow, and there's going to be another superhero on our doorsteps, and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, well, nope. Okay. Well, I'm sure the Jew Hollywood producers in Hollywood will actually create a movie with some kind of superhero that actually fulfills that role, and then they can vicariously sit there and slather down their greasy popcorn and think about just how blessed we are, you know. Well, what was the quote? Come on, guys. Somebody help me out here. What was that quote that George Bush, the stupid, you know, that's the young one. What was his quote concerning the Constitution? Does anybody remember?
Just a piece of paper.
Just a piece of GD paper.
Yeah, but guys, everybody knows that's not right. I mean, look, all you got to do is look around you at all of these people who have this document that was inspired by God, and it's going to cure all of these things. We have constitutional rights. What you guys are making me ill.
Uh-oh.
Here's a little piece of the hard truth here for you. Now, Mike, you and I are friends, but I live close enough to drive down there and sit with you through this, okay? And to get you past this. The fact of the matter is you don't have any constitutional rights. You have exactly what are called privileges and immunities. You don't have constitutional rights. You have privileges and immunities. And that's just another form of denial, plausible deniability in the people that don't want to address reality. So here's just a little background on human behavior and objective evaluation and when you're qualifying people. In the airline, you have a term called espousing. Okay, this is when you actually are making a declarative statement and you're stating, this is what I perceive there to be. A declaratory statement, you're espousing this. And then you have this other side of this question or this this moment where you're evaluating whatever it is, you have the observed reality of it. Now we had the ability to actually graph and chart the difference between what somebody was espousing, their perspective and their reality was, and what the observation of the actual reality was. And you literally could graph it and chart it. Now, the more that those two lines diverged from each other was actually determined and identified to be the level of insanity present in that espouser. Okay. And we are wrought with hundreds of millions of people in this landmass that are insane. They're literally losing it. This place and their minds are coming apart like taking all the cotter pins out of a helicopter and running it full bore. How long is that going to stay together? So I just simply say this, guys, that what we're observing in real time, however it plays out, like Giuseppe or Dave was talking about in the first hour, was a really good hour. People are sorting themselves out. And, you know, whoever you are, you're listening, you're wherever you're gaining this, this sorting is occurring right now. It's so people are sorting themselves out. And I don't waste my time on people who wear masks and take shots. I just don't waste my time on them. That's not your demographic. That's not your audience. That's not who you're trying to help. It's the people that still are who do not wear masks have sorted themselves out. So all the obedient ones are not in the demographic that I'm going to waste any of my time on. Okay, because that's just not they're insane.
I made a great observation a while back, which is that it's voting that prevents people from seeing we are run. This government is essentially a mafia. It acts like a mafia. It works like a mafia. And the results that they produce are like a mafia. It's only voting that prevents people from seeing that, because it gives people the illusion that somehow we have some kind of say in what happens to the mechanizations of the government. But the reality is it's all just an illusion.
Well, that's well,
absolutely.
That's there.
Guys, if I could, there was one, now that I've gotten over the shock of Daryl just really licking all the red off my candy about the Constitution, now that he's just absolutely deflated me, I would like to point out the a little connection here that might help people going back to 9/11. Now, the one person that I mentioned before, one person bought all of this stuff. Well, this one person who made this purchase was a customer of Deutsche Bank, Alex Brown. Now, this trade involved put options on United Airlines consisting of 2,500 put options, but for some reason, these were all split into five chunks of 500 put options each, and then they were directed to multiple exchanges around the country simultaneously. So lots of people were going to be paid off here. when the 9/11 Commission report pointed to that, as I mentioned before, that single U.S.-based institutional investor with no conceivable ties to Al-Qaeda, it was referring to Deutsche Bank Alex Brown. Now, let's look into this. Deutsche Bank Alex Brown was the financier of two groups. One was called the Carlyle Group, and the other was Brown Brothers Harriman. Now, for those of you who know your history, you will know that one of the Bush grandfather operated out of Brown Brothers Harriman, financing the Nazi war machine. And that's where the Bush fortune comes from. And we also know that George H.W. Bush was a sitting board member of the Carlyle Group with several Arab Emirates. But let's also look at this. Now, Alex Brown, which was purchased by Deutsche Bank to become Deutsche Bank Alex Brown. Alex Brown, the manager of Alex Brown, was a guy by the name of Buzzy Krongard. Now, he left Alex Brown, and guess where he went to work? He went to work in 1998, and he joined the CIA as counsel to Director George Tenet. Now, George Tenet was CIA director at the time of 9/11, if I'm not mistaken. So Krongard had previously been a consultant to CIA Director James Woolsey in the mid-1990s under Clinton. And on September the 11th, Krongard, who had been in the financial industry before, was the executive director of the CIA, the third highest position in the agency. If you ever sit down and start drawing up how these people get on this merry-go-round of where they move between financial institutions, the CIA, and into government, into you know, the various branches and banks and all of this other stuff, it's like a revolving wheel.
Mike,
yes, sir.
Any thoughts on the fact that George H.W. Bush, his father, Prescott, Senator Prescott Bush, sought to lead a seditious coup against Roosevelt and overthrow the government and skated because he should have been hanged as a traitor, seditious traitor. Oh. And what happened is he agreed to not do it again, and that his children would never enter into federal government. And he honored his agreement, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's not forget the wonderful guy that they tried to use to accomplish that purchase, to accomplish their purpose, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler.
Yeah, a real hero, really.
And then that's an interesting story, Giuseppe, which I'm sure you're familiar with, is they send contacts to Smedley Darlington Butler and say, hey, we want to overthrow the government and institute a totally fascist government here in the U.S. And so Smedley Butler goes along with them, hoping to find out who the big wheel perpetrators are behind it. He finally gets the information that he needs, i.e. DuPont, Prescott Bush, and all the others. And so he goes to Congress, and they go into executive session, and they talk to him, and they say, okay, we're going to get right into this and what have you. Smedley Butler then goes to the sidelines thinking, okay, I'll sit by. Congress is going to take care of this. After a few years, he noticed Congress did absolutely nothing.
Right.
So he goes to the media and he says, look, I gave this information to Congress. So media goes to Congress, and the people in the Congress that talked with Smedley Butler says, hey, you know, that poor old man, that poor old soldier, he's just lost his mind. Old Giblet Eye, he just doesn't have it anymore. So he dies ashamed man. But in 1967, there's this guy going through the National Archives, and he's doing a book on the Senate. And he goes through and he finds the documents of this secret executive session with Smedley Butler, and he exonerates Butler, of course, many years after his death. But these people don't care about anybody. They will kill anybody at any time for anything. And if you think they care about you one instant, you you know, I've got some oceanfront property in Kansas for sale.
Yeah. And of course, Butler was the most decorated veteran ever at that time. So it shows you anybody can fall from grace if they step out of line.
Well, the one thing about Butler was, and it's not known until you really, and I wrote an article about him, imagine that. But I did an article on him about 15 years ago, and I did a great dive into his Smedley Butler was awarded two Congressional Medals of Honor, but he was put in for two more, which were reduced to a Navy Cross. I mean, this guy, but he made a fatal mistake. He wrote a book called War is a Racket.
Right.
And he gave away the reason we have wars is to enrich these people. The same reason we had 9/11 is to enrich these people. The same reason we have COVID, to enrich these people. The same reason we have mandatory vaccinations, to enrich the wealthy and the well-born, as was spoken by Alexander Hamilton 235 years ago.
Excellent point.
Right. Well, the enrichment that they're after and have achieved is control. They don't need any more money, so-called money. They don't need that. Their enrichment, what they value, is control, and this is what they continue to gain more of because they don't need any more money, all right? It was a really, really good book that goes along with what Mike is talking about, and I'm really glad you brought it up, Mike, it's called The Plot to Seize the White House by Jules Archer, written in 1973. And it details the chronologically and lays out the complete story that Mike is referring to. And this is in 1933 that these events happen. And this is at the time with FDR just coming into office and also the bankruptcy. All the assets in the United States being collateralized, all the land, and for that matter, the people were collateralized at that time. And the people that are behind this, I know this will really shock a lot of people, but the people that are the driving force behind Prescott Bush and Brown, Bethlehem, and Harriman are the British out of the city of London. Okay. Imagine that.
Well, so, hey, DW, just to draw a parallel there, who was the driving force behind Robert Morris?
Well, I would say it was the Zionist British Privy Council in the City of London.
Bank of England.
That's who.
Yeah, the same thing.
That's who that is.
The same organization. Who was the driving force behind the Civil War? The same people.
The Bank of England.
Every time.
Listen,
go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I've been saying this for the last couple of years now. It's always been the British, and it still is. Don't you get it? You don't. Okay, I'm just going to spill the beans here. Okay. Mike likes to just feed it out and actually build a historical background. I'm just apt to just spill the beans. And I get to the money shot here. And the British were the progenitors, the originators, the conceptual thinkers of how to weaponize and leverage vaccines in the 1800s. Okay. This is where all this ideology of vaccination even comes from. It comes out of the before 1850. Okay. And it's British. And this is the period of Malthus and Galton and Darwin. Okay. This is where this all leads back to, this ideology. And you just think the British are just, you know, this wonderful quaint that talk kind of funny and they have weird humor and lousy food. That's who's pulling your strings, okay?
ADW.
It always has been, and it still is.
ADW, yeah. I got a question for you.
All right.
19. Oh, wow. First day with my new brain. I'm sorry. 1783, a peace treaty between England and the U.S. to end the Revolutionary War. In the wording of that treaty, who was called the Prince of the United States?
George
King
was.
George the Third.
Yeah, he was the Prince of the United States. Yeah. Oh my. And guess what? They part of that agreement was that they had a contract to provide certain services, and that people who didn't want to become Americans could operate U.S. citizens. Okay, and their rights and privileges would be protected.
Okay, read your history, people.
Yeah,
I got another question. You're my answering machine. You're my answering machine. All right. Okay, between 1783 and 1789, who was the attorney in the United States that filed suit for all of the Tories and all of the property that had been seized during the war from the people who were loyal to King George? What attorney took on the majority of these cases to get all of their property back?
Okay, well, listen, I don't actually know or recall the exact name or answer, but given the timeline and the events, I'm going to submit the name Alexander Hamilton.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
Oh, boy. Oh, this is fun. Give me another one.
Here. Yeah. In August of 2021, there is a new book coming out. They have finally decided they will step up and tell the truth. In 2021, did you know that there is a book that will be published to where they will finally step up and claim that Alexander Hamilton was, in fact, a Jew?
Wow.
Well, I have to tell the truth. I actually knew about this, but I heard it from you. So I want to get my early pre-delivery order in. So okay. I can send it to LaRouche. So I can send it to Harvey Schlanger at LaRouche Pack.
Right. So here's a question, guys. Now that we know that, why did they have to surreptitiously bring Alexander Hamilton into this country? And, you know, isn't this a crazy circumstance? His mother was obviously Jewish. She's buried in a Jewish cemetery. Okay, his father was Jewish, but he was the bastard stepchild of a Scotch trader, but his mom and dad never separated.
Yeah.
Oh.
But why?
That's suspicious.
Why? Why did they have to do this?
Well, they get their inside man into the inner circle.
True, Dave, but why did they have to be sneaky about it?
Right.
Hey, Mike, is Hamilton a bastard of the Duke of Hamilton?
No. His father was his father. They're going to provide the documented evidence in this new book, and they're very proud of this new book.
Bastard.
But if you will remember, as a Jew, you could not serve in the government of the United States until after 1800.
Yeah. Yeah. So he
and
was,
how about
he was the yeah Alexander Hamilton was the original American Murano or Converso. I don't know if you guys are familiar with what the Germans refer to the Jews as. They refer to them as cuckoo birds. Have you ever heard why? You ever heard why they call them cuckoo birds?
Tell us.
Because the cuckoo bird. Yeah, the cuckoo bird is a big obnoxious. It's got a big nose too. It's got this really big nose, and it's very obnoxious, and it's lazy. And it wants to take advantage of other birds, and it's its nature. Okay, it's in their DNA, and so what the cuckoo bird mother will do, that's interesting. And the cuckoo bird mother, the matrilineal line there. Anyway, the cuckoo bird mom will go find some other nice little bluebird or blue jay or robin or some other bird, and she'll find the nest and she'll lay her cuckoo bird egg in the nest. And then the parents of the original nest will care for and take care of and keep the eggs warm, and then they'll hatch. And the cuckoo bird is going to be bigger than the other birds, so as the cuckoo bird is being fed by its proxy mothers and nourished, as it grows, it gets more food, it gets bigger. And then it takes the other little birds and it throws them out of the nest, and then it takes over and subsumes the host and feeds off of it.
Are you gentlemen aware that the Dutch gentleman who created the New York Stock Exchange explicitly said, "Do not let Jews participate in this in any way"?
Yeah.
Too bad nobody heeded his warning.
Well, I think
Ben Franklin said that.
Ferengi again, guys.
The Ferengi.
Okay, here's a question, guys. What was, what was Ulysses S. Grant's special order number 11?
To kick the carpetbaggers out of the South before the war was over, because they were exploiting the situation. Is that close enough?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Buzz, wrong answer. Special order number 11 was written during the war, and Ulysses S. Grant kicked all the Jews out of the Union Army.
Oh, wait. I remember. All
right, wow.
Of course, that was quickly countermanded by Abraham Lincoln. But it actually happened.
Fascinating.
Wow.
That's something else, man.
I'm seeing a pattern.
There's a pattern.
Yeah, no, just some weird stuff here. Loving it. I mean, we can obviously see what these guys have done in terms of how important deception and perception management is. So, I think it's good to really get the truth out there and really kick the can down the road as far as this dialogue. And I think it's hard for some people to maybe hear. They might be turned off by it until you research into this. And then when you do, you'll be probably more pissed off than we are and be throwing us out of the way to get after these people.
Right.
I think Bush was right. People find out what they're up to, they're going to drag them through the streets.
Well, and what's fascinating to me here is that we're just, between Daryl's story about the cuckoo bird and Alexander Hamilton, we're seeing a real insight into the methodology of how they do what they do. And it really hasn't changed that much over the years.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely agree.
I just want to make something. We're kind of winding down here, and I just want to contribute this, is that obedience and complicity will be your destruction. And you've been so obedient for so long, you don't know how to disobey and when and how. And just remember, as long as you use their shekels, they don't need shackles. Okay? Just remember that. It kind of rolls off the lips. If you use their shekels, they don't need shackles.
Hey, and, great one, DW. I got another
question
really
good
for you.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's great. Go ahead, Mike.
I got another question for you, DW.
Okay.
Who was Stalin's number one murder guy? Who did most of his dirty work, especially at Paul DeBoer?
Yeah.
Derzinski.
It was a Jew. It was a Jew.
Yagoda.
Here you go. Thank you. You're right.
Well, actually, guys, it was Lazar Kaganovich.
Oh, Kaganovich. Oh, right.
I was going to say a guy. Yeah.
But I was muted.
Oh, okay. Kaganovich. Okay, doesn't count, Chris, if you mute yourself.
No, it's muted.
No points.
I saw that, but I thought that was just your breakfast burrito coming up.
Kaganovich. I totally had it. I was like, man, but I'm muted.
Hey, is muting yourself like wearing a mask?
I just came across a very interesting graphic of deaths caused by groups in 2020, right? The white supremacist is being vilified, caused 16 deaths in 2020. 11,000 deaths were caused by blacks. 80,000 deaths were caused by Jewish opioid manufacturers. There you go. That's quite telling.
Well, you opened up a can of worms for me there, Giuseppe. Thank you for doing that. So I'm going to run a little timeline here that starts in about 1915. It's going to go really quick, so watch. The whole period of the 1900s to 20th century was a process and objective of population reduction. Okay. And it resulted in, these are some figures are somewhat disputable, but approximately 300 million white Christians around the world were destroyed through the process of war who could not reproduce or contribute further to their families or society and their culture and ideology. These 300 million are eliminated, taken out of the game, which means that if each one of those men would have had two or three children, we're pushing what would have amounted to a billion people. So this, they're out of the game, okay? And it accomplishes multiple objectives. This is the 20th century. Now, after open warfare is over, they move into a cultural population reduction, which is the social revolution across not just America, across the entire world, Western world, and this is the sex game. With hedonistic pagan sex activities and abortion on demand, and also help me the pill, Planned Parenthood. This is also another form of warfare and population reduction. Okay, so now we move into I think we're over a billion people here that would have been that aren't. And now we are into a period now that's coming about. This isn't the population reduction period that we're experiencing now. This is the population elimination period. This is where we, going forward from here, we're on the fast track to elimination, whatever time scale it takes. It will, whether it takes 5 years or 20 years, it will be rapid, relatively speaking. And that will bring in what their ideology has been after for 300 years. Okay. They want to be transhuman. This is to bring in the transhuman. So they went from reduction, reorganization, then to elimination, and then to transform. So sometimes I just like to take big steps. Sometimes it's easier to climb up really high and look down instead of trying to wade through the little details.
Yeah, that takes it back to sort of what I was going into about transhumanism in the opening hour. And we're down to the last couple of minutes. I want to get some final thoughts. Let's start with Chris. Chris, what are your final thoughts for us, man?
Oh, man, you guys got a great bunch of topics here. I want to bring up also like the opioid epidemic, and that was taking out more than 200,000 people every year, but it was supposedly never an epidemic. These are real deaths, not the ones that you're calling flu and mislabeling COVID. So just to put that out there.
Great point. Giuseppe, final thoughts, sir.
I think that the internationalist Jew is a Satanist and is misdirecting the lies of COVID and these comorbidity deaths when the internationalist Jew and their minions are stealing over 800,000 children just in the United States alone for organ trafficking, for adrenochrome production, for satanic blood sacrifice and ritual, for you name it. And, you know, we are at war with these subhuman internationalist Jews, and people need to take their heads out of their rear ends and wake up and do something about it.
Yeah, that's right. Excellent points. We are at war, but most people are blissfully unaware of it. They just go about their lives. And as Daryl said, just submitting and complying, thinking that somehow that will make things better, when in the end, it's only going to make things worse. Mike, final thoughts, sir.
Don't worry. Don't panic. We have a constitution.
Yeah. You're a comedian, man. I just love you. I love you. You're a comedian. I love it.
He's here all week.
Fascinating to hear more revelations about Alexander Hamilton and the methods of how they get one of their insiders into the inner circle of a movement that is diametrically opposed to what they wanted to do, and get their guy right in the middle of it. Just amazing, amazing story. Daryl, why don't you take us out? What's your final thought, sir?
Compliance is evil. If you are compliant, you are evil. A snake can't be considered evil because that's its nature. And I'm not sure I consider these people evil. It's their nature. But if you know different and you comply, you're the evil one. You are.
That's true. Daryl, it's time for people to realize what's going down and stop being part of it, because we've all been complicit in this big game. And it's time to put an end to that. And I just want to thank everyone that came aboard here. Daryl, Mike Gaddy, Chris, and Giuseppe. What an excellent conversation we've had. We've hit the subject from so many different viewpoints. And Daryl, you really brought a lot of things out today that I haven't heard anywhere else. And Mike, your information continues to just blow me away. And you're just like a wrecking ball to patriotic illusions.